Now we're holding on Pei Gimel Amud Aleph, the third line. We're looking at the Mishnah Nichnas L'Chater. We were talking about the point that if you bring the blood of a Chatas, and according to the Bakiva, any carbon, according to the Yazir, a Chatas or an Asham, if you bring the blood into the Heichel, then the carbon becomes tossel and it has to be burned. So we're discussing different dinim of that. And we said, one point we said in the Mishnah is that if he took the blood in intending to sprinkle it, but he didn't actually sprinkle it, then we have a machloekas. Rabbi Yezer said that the korban is already possible from that, and Rabbi Shimon says only if he actually sprinkles it. So the Gemara says, Tanya, Rabbi Yezer Omer, why does Rabbi Yezer say that just bringing it in with intention to sprinkle it is enough to possible it, even though it wasn't actually sprinkled? Because he says we have a Zayda Shava. The pasuk describes over here that if you bring the blood into the Heichel to be Mechaper in the holy place, the Nemalahalon, and by the Kohen Gadol's Avoda on Yom Kippur, it also says that nobody should be in the Oil Moed Bevoya Lechaper Bakodesh when he comes to be Mechaper in the holy place. Malahalon before a Kippur, Afkan before a Kippur. Now, when is it? By the Kohen Gadol's Avoda in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, it's not just when he's doing the Avoda, before he even does the Avoda. It's not just when he's doing the avoda. It's before he does the avoda. Everybody has to be out of the oil mode. The same way over here says Rabbi Eliezer, before you even do the kapara, before he even does the sprinkling of the blood in the kodesh kodashim, already it will be possible if he just by bringing it in. Reb Shimon says, yes, but you have a different Zeta Shava. Nemakam Lachaper and Nemlahalon, you have over here the word Lachaper, but you have also a different Pasuk, also by the Korbanos of Yom Kippur, the Eis Tarachatos, the Seirachatos, Asherhova Zomim Lachaper, the bull and the goat of Machatos, where the blood was brought in to be Machaper. Then the Pasuk goes on to say that you take those Korbanos outside your Shalayim and burn them. Malahalam B'Shekipur. Now that applies only after the blood has been sprinkled. If something went wrong and the Korban didn't end up being done properly, then you don't take it outside your Shalayim to burn it. Afkan B'Shekipur, the same way when the Pasuk is saying that if you brought in the blood, L'chaper, then the Korban is possible, that will mean only if you actually did the Kapara, not just if you planned to. So in other words, in short, they both have Gzeira Shavas to back them up. Rabbi Yezu Gzeira Shava is based on the Kohen Gadol coming in to do the Avoda, where everybody has to be out of the Avoda, where everybody has to be out of there before he starts the Avoda, and Rav Shimon, on the other hand, is learning from when the avoda has actually been accomplished. So the Gemara says, "B'mayi kumbeslagi." What's the underlying machlokas? Mar sava done in chutz mechutz vein done in chutz mepnim. Rabbi Eliezer says, you want to learn something that takes place out, that's supposed to stay outside the Heichel, from something else that should stay outside the Heichel. The blood of the Chatos is supposed to stay outside the Heichel. The people are supposed to stay outside the Heichel when the Kohen Gadol was doing the avoda. So therefore, we should learn that the in done in chutz mipnim, rather than learning from. You want to learn Reb Shimon's Zera Shava, but there you're talking about the kapara that actually was supposed to take place. So therefore, you're supposed to bring the blood inside. So therefore, says Reb Eliezer, that's not a good place to learn the kavachomer from. Or Mar Sava, whereas Reb Shimon holds done in behema with behema, then done in behema with adam. On the other hand, Reb Shimon says that the Zera Shava that you want to use, Reb Eliezer, is between an animal and a person. The lachaper bakodesh is referring to the blood of an animal, chatas, and the lachaper bakodesh by the Kohen Gadol, by his avoda, by everybody staying out, is talking about people staying out. So more logically, we should learn a Zeta Shava from one thing involving an animal to another thing involving an animal from the kapara that's done with the animals on Yom Kippur, rather than the people who have to stay outside the Heichel during the Kohen Gadol's avoda, and therefore the result would be that only when the sprinkling was actually done, not when he just brought it in intending. So each one of them has a basis for his kavachomer. for his Gzeira Shava, rather. Each one has a basis for his Gzeira Shava, for why we're going to say whether he actually sprinkled it or not. So, next, Mishnah had said, Rabbi Yehuda, that if he brought it in b'shoigig, then it's kosher. So the Gemara says, ha-mezid posel. Now, obviously, the implication is that if he brought it in b'mezid, then the korban is going to be posel. Does that mean b'shekeeper or b'shaloi keeper? So what does Rabbi Yehuda hold? Which of the previous tanoim is he agreeing with? Is he talking, or is he modifying what they're saying? He's saying only if he brought it in b'shoigig. But are we talking about, implying that if he brought it in b'mezid, is it enough that he just brought it in b'mezid and already then the korban will be posel, which is according to Rabbi Eliezer, or would it have to be he brought it in b'mezid and he sprinkled it, which would be like Rabbi Shimon? So what does Rabbi Yehuda mean? Rabbi Yehuda, so Rabbi Yehuda says, I'll show you, I'll bring a proof from the following braisa. And on the side it says over here, it should say Toshmab Tanya, that we're going to prove from the following braisa. Again, referring to the Korbanos of Yom Kippur. Now the pasuk says, the Eis Parachatos Ve'esirachatos Ashohuva Es Domam L'chaper B'Kodesh. The pasuk says the words Eloi Omoyed are in parenthesis, and they don't really belong, they're not in the pasuk. Anyway, the pasuk says the Parachatos and the Seirachatos, where the blood was brought in to be M'chaper in the holy place. So it lists those korbanos, and it says that you should take them out of the, Beis Mikdash and take them outside Yerushalayim and burn them. Now, why does the pasuk then have to say why does the pasuk have to continue with vasodah, the one who burns them, that he becomes tamei? If in the previous pasuk it already says they have to be taken out of Yerushalayim and burnt, so why does it have to repeat the word vasodah? So the Gemara asks, what do you mean? What do you mean? What does it mean? What do you need that pasuk for? Lagufa, it's just you need it to teach us the actual din that it says in that pasuk. Not only do you have to take the bodies of these korbanos outside Yerushalayim and burn them, but that whoever is involved with burning them becomes tamei. That is what the pasuk is saying. Vasodif osim, anybody who the ones who burn them, yechabes godav, so wash his clothes, meaning toivel his clothes, and dip himself in the mitzvah, and only then is he tahor. So you need the word vasodif for that. So what is the Gemara? What is the Braisa asking? What do we need it for? Ella, no. What it means is matchamadloim chatos chatos. Why in the previous pasuk does it have to say chatos twice? There is para chatos, there is seira chatos. We know already that they're chatos. And in any case, if you needed to say it, fine. To say maybe not, maybe it's not some other para and sir, then at least to say chatos once. There is para seira chatos. So why does it repeat the word chatos? Is like this. Now, we've learned so far that the korbanos of Yom Kippur, that these two korbanos, the par and sor of Yom Kippur, that they have to be burnt when everything was done properly and the avodah was done successfully, then they have to take them to the Beis Hadeshin, to the usual place where they deposit the ashes of the Mizbeach, and they have to burn them over there. We've learned earlier in the Masechta of the Trumas Hadeshin, where every day the Kohen would take a pan full of ashes off the Mizbeach and put it on the floor near the Mizbeach. We mentioned this in morning davening. Then afterwards they would take the ashes and take them outside Yerushalayim. According to most, we showed them only when it was really full. According to the Rambam, every day. Be that as it may, there was a special place outside Yerushalayim where they would deposit them. This is also the place where you have to burn the par and sor of Yom Kippur. And we also know from that pasuk, umetamim the godim, and we also know, so we know that those are burnt in the Beis Hadesh, umetamim the godim, that those make the person's clothes tamei when he burns them, meaning that not only himself, not only his body becomes tamei, but even the clothes that he's wearing becomes tamei, which means, in other words, means that he's an avat tamei. Shal nisrofin minayin, how do we know the same thing applies to other korbanos that have to be burnt outside Yerushalayim? Tamalam chatas chatas, divi Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda says we learn that from the fact that it repeats the word chatas, so it applies not only to the chatoris of Yom Kippur, but also to other chatoris as well. So we haven't yet gotten to the proof of what Rabbi Yehuda holds. Again, we were trying to figure out what does Rabbi Yehuda hold about the case where a person brings in the blood into the heichal b'mezid, but he has not sprinkled it. What would be the din? But when we finish the after we finish the braisa and we analyze it, then we'll see. Before we get to that point, though, so Rashi points out that when it mentions that they have to be burnt in the Beis Hadeshin, that's actually the Braisa is mentioning that unnecessarily, because that point we actually don't learn by the Korbanos of Yom Kippur. The pasuk says Yotzi on the Chutz Machna, that he should take them outside the Machna and burn them, but it doesn't say where. It's actually by other Korbanos. It's actually by the Par Helam Davashal Tzibur that it says Al Shetach Hadeshin Yisarif, that has to be burnt where the ashes are poured out. But over there, by the Par Helam Davashal Tzibur, it does not say anything about being the Tam of the Godin. It says that only by the Korbanos of Yom Kippur. Therefore, that's really what the Braisa is focusing on. How do we know that just like the Korbanos of Yom Kippur, the ones who burn them become Tomei, not only them, but their clothing? How do we know the same thing applies to the other part of Manasirim and Nisrapim, is what we're learning from this extra word Chatas, according to the Yehuda. Tosfos actually says it's not really by the Par Helam Davashal Tzibur, it's actually by the Par Parim Mashiach, but it is true, the underlying point is true, that the Braisa didn't need to mention that point. That said, though, Tosfos says another way you could understand the Braisa is, maybe it's not so unnecessary. What it means is, of the various ones that we know that are burnt on the Beis Hadeshin, the only one that we know that is in the time of the Gavim is the ones of Yom Kippur. How do we know that it means that it means the Par Korin Mashiach and the rest of them as well? In other words, the Braisa is not saying we know that they're burnt in the Beis Hadeshin and that they're in the time of the Gavim. Maybe we should punctuate the Braisa as saying, we know that of the ones that are burnt by the Beis Hadeshin, the ones of Yom Kippur, it says explicitly on the time of the Godim. How do we know this is true of the rest of them as well? Okay, in any case, so that's Rabbi Yehuda says that that's how we learn it. Rabbi Meir Omer Enet Sarich. Rabbi Meir says, I don't need to learn that from the extra word Chatos. The pasuk already says the parachatos and the seirachatos, and the pasuk continues with the words lachaper bakodesh. Now the Torah did not have to use the word lachaper because we know that they were brought into mechaper. So why does the pasuk then add the word lachaper? Limit our kolam is skaprim. This teaches us about all cases where the blood is used for kapara in the heichal that shall serve from the time of Godim, that whoever burns them outside Yerushalayim he and his clothing will become tamei. Now, so how does this show? So Rabbi Yumia says, having brought this braisa, how does this show what Rabbi Yehuda holds on the subject of bringing the blood in where it's not lechaper? Why can he not learn from that extra word, from that word lechaper? Why does he have to learn from the fact that it says twice chatas? Because he says lechaper le mashmale. He doesn't hold that the word lechaper is teaching us that anybody who, that he can't learn from the word lechaper, that any time that blood was brought into the heichal to be mechaper, then it's matame, the person who burns it, my timer. Now, why would that be? Evidently, the reason is because Rabbi Yehuda needs that word lechaper for gzeirah shava. Namely, the gzeirah, and therefore, now which gzeirah shava uses the word lechaper? That was Rabbi Shimon's drasha. Because Rabbi Eliezer's drasha, Rabbi Eliezer Jerusha had used not just the word lechaper, but the word lechaper bakoidish. So therefore, but only Rabbi Shimon's word, only Rabbi Shimon's Jerusha uses only the word lechaper. Rabbi Eliezer's Jerusha had not used the lechaper bakoidish from the parah v'sarah and nisrafim at all. Rabbi Eliezer's Jerusha had used lechaper bakoidish about the din of bringing the blood into the heichal, and lechaper bakoidish by the kohen gadol going into do the avodah. He hadn't used the word lechaper by the parah v'sarah, by the parah and sarah that are being burnt at all. So according to him, that word, lechaper, is very much available, and therefore Rabbi Meir can use it for his drasha. Rabbi Yehuda, who disagrees, evidently is using that word lechaper for of Zera Shav. Which one? Rabbi Shimon's Zera Shav, because Rabbi Shimon is using that word lechaper for this other end of his Zera Shav. Therefore, that demonstrates that Rabbi Yehuda holds like Rabbi Shimon, that only, so according to Rabbi Yehuda, for the blood, for the korban to be possible, it would have to be the blood was brought in, benazed, and was used to sprinkle it. So we have several different opinions then. So altogether, then we have Rabbi Eliezer saying that if it was brought in, then already the korban becomes possible. We have Rabbi Shimon says only if it's actually sprinkled over there. And Rabbi Yehuda says only if it's sprinkled and on top of that, that it was brought in, bemazed in the first place. The halacha is like Rabbi Yehuda, and the Rambam passed like Rabbi Yehuda, and therefore, so if he brought it in b'shoigig, then it's fine, and that would mean even if he sprinkled it over there, only if he brought it in b'mezid, and again, as the Gemara is saying over here, and he sprinkled it, only then would the carbon be possible. The next perek now, the ninth perek of our Masechta, is going to be dealing with a topic that we've learned over and over, we've talked about over and over in the Masechta, but now we're going to talk about it in detail. The concept of Olu lo Yerdu. So you have like this. Throughout the Masechta, we've been talking about various kinds of things that are possible and should not be placed on the Mizbeach. Now we're going to talk about, though, the Torah does tell us several psukim, as we're going to learn throughout the perek, there are several psukim that tell us that things that go on the Mizbeach become holy. So that teaches us, in other words, that even when there's something that shouldn't have belonged on a Mizbeach, for one reason or another, in many cases, we will nevertheless say that it can remain on a Mizbeach. This is called im olo lo yerdu, or whatever, you have the singular and the plural, that if it went up onto the Mizbeach, you don't take it down from the Mizbeach. So in other words, the kedusha of the Mizbeach is such that even certain things that otherwise would have been possible nevertheless become kosher b'di'evad when they're placed on the Mizbeach. An interesting vote from this, your Moshe Feinstein says that you can learn from this, that in the same vein, a person who learned Torah continues to have a certain connection to the Eidishter, even if afterwards he's not the way he's supposed to be. So he may be doing Averis and doing various things like that, but nevertheless, the fact that he has a connection to the Mizbeach, and in this case to the Torah, helps save him for the future. Now, even if he doesn't yet have a connection, a clear connection with Torah, nevertheless, you know, ultimately, lo yudach mimenu nidach, a yid is never completely lost, but at least, in other words, the idea is that where at least he's involved in limud haTorah, he's much more likely to be able to do tshuva, and therefore, in token of that, we have this din of im olo lo yered, that if he does, after all, approach the Mizbeach, then he stays, meaning, in other words, that such a person is much more likely, has much more of a capability to do tshuva and to actually belong on the Mizbeach as he should. So now our perek is going to deal with the details of this din. What kinds of psulim can and can't stay on the Mizbeach? So the Mishnah begins, HaMizbeach Mekadesh Es Haroi Loi. The Mizbeach is Mekadesh, things that are suitable for it. Now, so that means, in other words, again, even something that's possible, nevertheless, it becomes, as the Gemara calls it, Lach Moshe Mizbeach, the food of the Mizbeach, and therefore you don't take it down. Tosfos points out, now we're going to have a machlokes in the Mishnah of what stays on the Mizbeach and what not. So what we have over here, basically Tosfos says, we have a Stam Mishnah statement, an introductory statement, which everybody agrees to, that Es HaRoi Loi remains on the Mizbeach. Now within that, you have a machlokes, what is considered Roi Loi and what is not. Rabbi Yeshua says the rule is as follows. Kol HaRoi Le'ishin, anything that is suitable for the fires, and now the Gemara is going to point out that Es HaRoi Loi does exclude a certain kind of thing. We'll see in the Gemara what that means. But now, within that, we also have to figure what is considered Ein HaRoi Loi and what is considered Roi Loi. So Rabbi Yeshua Omer, the rule is Kol HaRoi Le'ishin. The rule is anything that is suitable for the fire of the Mizbeach, Im Olo Lo Yered, that if it's brought up to Mizbeach, you don't take it down. Meaning, as opposed to, for example, according to Rabbi Yeshua, blood that was possible would not remain on a Mizbeach. Even if you sprinkled it on a Mizbeach, you don't leave it there, but pashtus, it means you'd have to scrape it off. Or maybe it just means if you have a keli of blood, or maybe it just means if you have a keli full of possible blood that was brought onto the Mizbeach, you would take it down rather than leaving it there, because that's not something that's meant to be burnt in the fires of the Mizbeach. Similarly, Nesachim, the same thing. When you bring certain korbanos, you bring with them also wine, which is poured on the Mizbeach, same thing. That doesn't go into the fires of the Mizbeach. Therefore, Rabbi Yeshua says, the rule that we said in the first line of the Mishnah, HaMizbeach Mekadesh Es HaRoi Loi, Rabbi Yeshua says, the rule of HaRoi Loi means only things that are roi for the fire of the Mizbeach. So then, im olo layered, so if it goes up to the Mizbeach, even though it's possible, you don't take it down. But if it's something that doesn't belong on the fire in the first place, then Rabbi Yeshua says this rule of im olo layered would not apply, and you would, in fact, take it down. Shenema, because the posuk says, hi ha'oila al mokta, because the posuk says, it is the oila which is on the pyre of the Mizbeach. So Rashi explains, the word he is Bahava Yosin Yehei, it remains as it is. Once it was Ola, once it went up, Al Mokta, onto the burning place of the Mizbeach, onto the wood pile, the pyre of the Mizbeach, then Rabbi Yeshua says, you learn from that pasuk that you leave everything. So Tosfos points out that actually,
what
that
is what is the source of the word Mokta? Where does it come from? It seems like a foreign word.
Well, so the word mope, the shortest of it is yokad, yud kuf dalad, which means to burn, which means to light or to burn a fire. So mokda, many times in Hebrew, you have a mem is used to, as used as a prefix for a word to make a noun, like the thing with which something is done. In this case, mokda is the thing or the place where the yokad, where the burning is done.
Where does yakad come from? I mean, you don't see it in the Torah, never you often.
Well, right here, because I'll mokta is a positive. But you have a
okay, but other than that. Yeah.
Okay, it's not one of the more common words, I guess, but it comes up here and there. The Eshav is there, tukad bo, you have in those things, so come over there. There's another example of that shirish.
It means a strong flame. What's the difference between Esh and yakad? There has to be a difference if we have two words.
Esh means fire. Yakad would mean to burn a fire. I mean, the same way, you know, you don't necessarily, in English, you don't say to fire a fire, right? Is there a nuance in the word yakad that it means like some kind of stronger, that it means some kind of stronger fire? It's very possible. I don't know. I don't know. I'd have to look it up. But in any case, yeah, that is a normal word in Hebrew for burning. For burning is that shodesh yakad. Means to light a fire, means to light or stoke or whatever a fire. You have, by the way, another example of it is the Navi Yeshaya says about what's going to happen, about what's going to happen with Sancheirib's army, how they're all going to be destroyed by Hashem. He says, V'sachas kvoidoi, under their honor, which the Gemara discusses in Sanhedrin, whether that means their clothing or their body or whatever, Yekad Yekoid Ki Koid Eish, there'll be a burning fire set. Like a burning fire, meaning in other words, they were burnt by a fire that came in Hashemayim and burnt. And the Gemara discusses in Sanhedrin, does it mean that their insides were burnt and their bodies remained intact? Does it mean that their bodies were burnt and their clothing remained intact? Whatever the case, so yeah, there you have the shodesh three times in one pasuk. But yeah,
so it could mean that yakad means that something will remain from that fire eventually.
Maybe, although I don't know if it necessarily has to mean that. I mean, here actually the Gemara explains in Sanhedrin with some Sanhedrin's army, the reason we know that not everything was burnt is because the pasuk says v'sachas kevodei under their glory, which means, in other words, that there was something left underneath at all, either their clothing or their bodies, as the Gemara discusses.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so getting back to the Mishnah. So yeah, when the pasuk says Shiha Oila Al Mokta, that is the one that goes up onto the burning place. So therefore, so Rabbi Yeshua says Ma Oila Shiha Oila Ishim Im Also Leiteren. So what do we learn from that? Just like the Oila, which is something that belongs on the fire of the Mizbeach, if it went up, even though it was possible, nevertheless we say Shiha Oila, it remains the Oila that it was, and therefore it stays there. Leiteren, it doesn't come down. Af Kol Shiha Oila Ishim, the same thing as anything else which is suitable to be put on the fire of the Mizbeach Im Ola Leiteren. Then if it went up, it doesn't come down. But not things that don't belong on the fire in the first place, namely blood and nesachim, says Rabbi Yeshua. Tosfos points out, by the way, that we can't really be learning from the word he in the pasuk because the Gemara is going to explain that he is a mute. So according to Rashi, it comes out that he is actually a riboy because you're learning from it that even something that shouldn't have been there on the first place should nevertheless remain there. So rather, Tosfos says the real reason is because you have the pasuk Zos Torah Sa'ola, with the beginning of that same pasuk Zos Torah Sa'ola, meaning, as the Gemara is going to say later on, Torah Achas L'Chol Ha'Ola, and that there's one rule, one uniform rule for everything that goes up onto the Mizbeach. That's how Tosfos understands it rather than learning it from the word he, like Rashi says. The son Kodshim points out that Rashi would agree with that. Of course, the Gemara does say that he is a mute, but he would say that the fact is Zos Torah Sa'ola would have to include everything, and therefore, so he means only things that are royal ishim, only things that belong on the fire. So ultimately, he would be learning from both, from one a ribui that there's a concept of him ola yered, and from the other one a mute that it doesn't apply, so that it doesn't apply to things that don't belong on the fire in the first place. Okay, Rem Gamliel learns differently. Kol haroi l'mizbeach, anything that's suitable for the mizbeach, fire or not, im ola lo yered, if it goes up to the mizbeach, it doesn't come down. Shenema, hi ha'ola al mokda al mizbeach, because the pasuk says, it is the ola, which is on the bruning place, on the mizbeach. And the pasuk says, al mizbeach. So that means, ma ola shiru'uya le mizbeach, that means just like an ola, which is suitable to go on the mizbeach, it is true, of course, that an ola is burnt. But the point is, Rabbi Gamliel is focusing more on the fact that it goes on the mizbeach at all. Im also like teirin, and if an oiler goes up, as we're saying, then it doesn't come down. Af kol davashu roi lemizbeach, the same thing. Anything that's suitable for the mizbeach, even if it's not something that goes on the fire of the mizbeach. Im ola lo yered, im also like teirin, then if it goes up, it doesn't come down. So the Gemara, the Mishnah points out, ein ben divir, Rabbi Gamliel, divir Rabbi Yeshua, el adam banasachin. Well, what's the difference? Where does the difference come in between Rabbi Gamliel and Rabbi Yeshua? Is as far as blood and nasachin. So Rabbi Gamliel omer lo yerdu. Rabbi Gamliel says that if they're fossil, nevertheless, you don't take them down and they stay on the mizbeach. But Rabbi Yeshua omer yerdu, whereas Rabbi Yeshua says they do come down because, according to Rabbi Yeshua, the key factor is that they belong on the fire of the Mizbeach. Blood and Nesachim don't go on the fire. Therefore, according to him, the ribui of the Pasuk that they should stay over there does not apply. Whereas according to Rabbi Gamliel, that he focuses on Al Mizbeach, then nevertheless it still stays. Rabbi Shimon says here's another possibility. Here's another way of looking at it. Hazevach kosher nesachim psulim. Suppose that the korban itself is kosher, but the nesachim with it are psul. Now, the nesachim, for example, just like we learned in the previous parak, that if a murim, for example, are taken out of the azara, they become psul. Or if the blood is taken out of the azara, it becomes psul. Well, the same thing is true with the nesachim. They also have to stay in the azara. So suppose they became tamei or whatever. So in that case, the korban is kosher, but the nesachim are psul. Or the other way around, Rabbi Shimon says, hanesachim kshedim v'azevach psul. Or the other way around, the nesachim remain kosher, but the korban became posel. So then continues Rav Shimon, afilu zev zep psulin, or even if both of them are posel, has zevach lo yered v'anasachem yerdu. In all those cases, nevertheless, the korban itself does not come down from the mizbeach, but the nesachim do, because Rav Shimon has a third opinion. According to Rav Yeshua, the key factor is whether it belongs on the fire or not. According to Rabbi Gamliel, whether it belongs on the Mizbeach or not. According to Rabbi Shimon, is it something that's coming on its own, or is it something that's coming because of something else? So the Nesachim, now we're going to talk about in the Gemara, that sometimes the Nesachim can be brought by themselves. But here we're talking about, Rashi points out, here we're talking about the Nesachim that comes with the Korban. Well then, in that case, says Rav Shimon, always the rule is going to be the Korban itself, which is the main thing, nevertheless remains on the Mizbeach, even though it's possible, but the Nesachim, because they're only being brought as an adjunct of the Korban, therefore doesn't matter whether they themselves are possible, or the Korban is kosher, or the Korban is possible, and they would have been kosher, etc. Nevertheless, they become possible automatically, along with the korban, and therefore him all the yerdus. So, as in the Gemara, we'll learn why all of them have their respective opinions. But let's start with the first line in the Mishnah had said that hamizbeach mekadesh is a roi loy. So we have to figure out. And by the way, Tosfos points out, and Rashi implies as well that we don't mean actually in the case where the korban became posel and the nesachim are kosher, we don't mean really the nesachim are kosher. They in fact become posel precisely because they're supposed to be brought at the korban. No korban, no nesachim. All we mean is whatever psul happened to the korban, such as it becoming a balmul, or such as it becoming tomei, or what have you, didn't in and of itself affect the nesachim. Nevertheless, they become posel just by virtue of the fact that they are meant to be together with the korban, and therefore no korban, no nesachim. And therefore, says Reb Shimon, since they're not something independent, then therefore, im olu yerdu, we don't apply the rule that they remain on the mizbeach. Okay, so the Gemara starts off. We're saying roi loy ein, where the Mishnah had said that a mizbeach makadosh is a roi loy. A mizbeach is makadosh things that are suitable for it. So roi loy ein, that implies only things that are suitable for it. She'ein roi loy loy, implying something that's not suitable for the mizbeach is not niskadish. So the Mu'urti Mai, what is the Mishnah being Mamai by that? Meaning, in other words, we have the different opinions in the Mishnah, what is included and what is not included in Kol HaRoi L'Mizbeach. But it has to be, if we have a Stam Mishnah, if we have an independent statement that all the Tanoim and our Mishnah agree to, then it has to be that there's something that all of them would agree is considered Ein Roi Loi. What would that be? This, by the way, this kind of thing is an example of, now there's different opinions how exactly the Mishnah as we have it was compiled. We all know that Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi finalized the Mishnah as we have it, but we often have, sometimes throughout Shas, we'll have references to things like Mishnah Rishona and Mishnah Achrona, and things like Mishnah Rabbi Akiva. We usually say Sam Mishnah Rabbi Meir. There is an interesting opinion that the core of the Mishnah goes all the way back to the Anshe Knesset HaGdolah. That when Rabbi Isaac Halevi in his Sefer Doros HaRishonim talks about this many, many times, he calls that Yisoid HaMishnah. He calls that there's a foundation of the Mishnah, which goes back many, many generations before Rebbe, and according to this, all the way to the Anshe Knesset HaGdolah, and then the later Tanoim would use that as a basis for their opinions. So in this case, this HaMizbeach Mekadosh HaRoi Loi would be an example of that Yisoid HaMishnah. There was a basic concept formulated that the Mizbeach is Mekadosh, what's Roi for it. Now the later Tanoim, Rabbi Gamliel and Rabbi Yeshua and Rabbi Shimon are arguing what is included in Roy and what is not. But they all agree that there is something that's definitely considered a new Roy, and that all of them would agree is out of the picture. So what would that be? L'mo'urti mai. What would be as opposed to what? Amar Papa, L'mo'urti k'matzim shle kidshu b'kli. That would be, for example, the koimeth of a mincha that was not made holy in a kli shoris. Now we're going to learn in the Masechta Menachos, Be'ez Hashem, in a couple of months, that the way it works with a mincha, you take the mincha itself has to be placed in a kli shoris, and then after that, the koyim takes a koimeth from it. The koimeth itself has to be placed in another kli shoris. This is similar to the same way with an animal korban, you shecht it and then you shecht it and then you catch the blood in a basin. The same way by a mincha, you do the kmitza, which is the equivalent of the shritta, and then you have to place that kmitz in a container, the equivalent of kabbalah. So now, if that kmitz was not placed in a kli shoris, so it hasn't yet been designated to go on the Mizbeach. So therefore, so now, im olu yodu, so if such a thing goes on the Mizbeach, then you take it down. So that would be something that's in a roi. So when the Mishnah had said, kol roi la Mizbeach, that would exclude that kind of thing. Now, it is true, we did learn earlier in on the Masechta, and we're going to learn again in the Masechta Menachos, that Reb Shimon holds that even if the koimetz was not placed in a kli shoreis, it's kosher. Nevertheless, our Mishnah would not be like that. That said, though, Tosfos says the fact is that our Gemara, it seems, is trying to find something that would work according to all the Tanoim, because again, we're saying this is like the basis of the Mishnah that goes according to everybody. So according to Reb Shimon, you would have to say that the Mizbeach Mekadosh as a Roi Loi means, as opposed to the Lavoina of the Mincha, if it was placed on the Mizbeach before the Kmitza. A Mincha consists of flour mixed with oil, and then it's topped with Lavoina. Now, when the Kohen takes the koimetz of it, he moves the Lavoina to the side, takes the koimetz of only the flour and oil, and then collects all the Lavoina, puts it together with it in the Kli Shoris, and takes it over to Mizbeach and burns it. So now, Tosfos says, according to Reb Shimon, you would have to say that the Mishnah is excluding the Lavoina, even though the Lavoina is very much part of a kosher korban, but if it was placed on the Mizbeach before the koimetz, before the kmitza was done, then that's no good, and even Reb Shimon would agree that that's no good. Shidimuk Obetzes asks on that, and then explains otherwise, that according to Reb Shimon, on Mizbeach Mekadosh as a Roi Loi would indeed mean, now you're going to have, there are things learned later on in our Perek that don't belong on the Mizbeach. For example, the meat of most korbanos, you know, except for an oila, most korbanos are meant to be eaten. So then that would be an example. So according to Reb Shimon, with the Mishnah, HaMizbeach Mekadosh as a Roi Loi would exclude those. I, they're going to be mentioned in more detail later. That's not a problem. The Mishnah would be mentioning it briefly now and then going into greater detail later on. Tosfos points out. Now, it can't mean, for example, Keturis, because the Mishnah, the next Mishnah is going to mention Keturis, for example, and the same thing with Reveya and Nirva, various cases where the korban, where the animal was possible before it ever became, before it ever was designated for a korban, then those are indeed in other Yerudim, but the Mishnah doesn't have to, again, since the Mishnah is mentioning those later on, it didn't really need to be Mamayat them over here, so the Mishnah could have just said, I was Vech Makadish at Apsulin, and then we would, and but it, when it says Esa Roy Loy, implies that there's some kind of thing, which is not Roy Loy, and that's the answer. So according to, so it would be the koimetz that was not in a keli, or according to the Shimon, you have the different possibilities that would be as far as the Lavoina, or that it is a generic statement. Okay, the Gemara says, Maskif LaRavina. Ravina, though, questions that. Maishna Midu'ula. What? So you're telling me that if the koimetz was placed on the Mizbeach before it was placed in a Kli Shoris, why should that be any different than Ula's case? The Omar Ula, which Ula says, which we're going to learn, again later in our parak, that's Hashem, Emuri Kodshim Kalim Shehelon Lefnei Zrikas Domon, if you put the Emurim of Kodshim Kalim on the Mizbeach before the blood was sprinkled, now that's wrong, the blood is supposed to be sprinkled, and then you put the Emurim to burn on the Mizbeach, nevertheless, Lo Yerudu, you don't take them down, Nasu Lachmei Shom Mizbeach, because they become the food of the Mizbeach. So Tosfos points out that now later on in the parak we're going to discuss, Rabbi Yehuda holds that if the blood was spilled, if you weren't able to sprinkle the blood on the Mizbeach, then you would take the Emurim of that korban off. But here the blood is still there. You could sprinkle it. You just haven't done that yet. Even Rabbi Yehuda would be fine with leaving those Emurim on the Mizbeach there. Well, then in that case, why should it be any different? If you put the koimetz there before placing it in a Kli Shoris, what's the big deal? Im Olo Lo Yered, same way as you could argue before you sprinkled the blood, the Emurim are not yet designated for Hashem, and nevertheless, if you put them there, Olo Lo Yeredu, shouldn't it be the same thing with the Kermits? And the answer is no, it's not the same thing. Hanach Lemichsru Maisem Gufayu, because when it comes to the Emurim, there's nothing lacking that needs to be done with them themselves. There is something that needs to be done, the blood needs to be sprinkled, but that's not the Emurim themselves. Hocha, Tani, when it comes to the koimetz, michastru maisi begufayu, there's something lacking in the actual goof of it. It needed to be placed in a kli shoris, and until that's done, it's not considered belonging to the mizbeach yet, and therefore that would be the difference. And then we would, in fact, say im olu yod. So again, that would be what the Mishnah is excluding by saying a mizbeach makadish is a roi loy, implying, but not this koimetz, which is not yet roi for the mizbeach. Again, according to the Bshimin, maybe not, and according to the Bshimin, we would have to learn the Mishnah differently. Next, the Mishnah had said Rabbi Yeshua imakolaroi leishin fuller, that Rabbi Yeshua had said that the key factor is whether it belongs on the fire of the Mizbeach. And he said, because since the Pasuk says, hi ha'ola al mochta. So they want to ask, Rabbi Gamliel na'ami ha'ksiv ola al mochta. Well, what is Rabbi Gamliel doing with that, with those words, the ola that goes on the fire, implying that it's only, that this din applies only to things that go on the fire. The answer is, ahu la'aduri poikin hudasa. Rabbi Gamliel learns a whole different din from that. That, if you have, never mind things that are possible, something perfectly kosher that was placed on the fire of the Mizbeach, and then it jumped off. Sometimes you have, the Rambam points out, and we all know, Maisim B'chol Yom, you burn something in a fire, and it has moisture in it, so then sometimes the moisture causes it to jump up, and sometimes to jump out of the fire. As it boils, and then the steam in it causes it to jump around and to even fall off the Mizbeach. So now Rav Gamliel says from the words al mokta, we learn from that la'adri poikin hudasa, that if something was validly on the fire of the Mizbeach and then it jumped off, then you still have to put it back. It was what went up onto the fire, and that means it was already on the fire, and therefore you have to put it back on the fire. So what does Rabbi Yeshua answer to that? La'aduri poikin minale, where does he know that din from? And the answer is nafgalei me'ashatoicha la'ech. He learns it from the fact that the pasuk continues that the fire burns the olah on the mizbeach, so that means anything that the fire was burning and that belonged on the fire, then you should put it back. In other words, the point is, obviously, the Pasuk is saying, Behirim is adeshin, that the Kohen should take off the ashes, that the fire has burnt the Ola on the Mizbeach. Now, of course, where do ashes come from? They come from a fire. There would have been no need for the Pasuk to mention that point. Therefore, says Rabbi Yeshua, we learn from those words that you have something that was burning and then fell off the fire because it jumped off over there, then it exploded off the fire. Nevertheless, you have to put it back. V'idach, well, what does Rabbi Gamliel answer to that? He says, he uses that to teach us the following din. Within this din of things that fell off the Mizbeach because they jumped out of the fire, when do we have this din that you have to put back things that fell off the fire is only things from an oila or other similar korbanos that fell off the fire, then you have to put it back. However, if the same thing happens with the keturas on the mizbeach apnimi and some of it fell off, then you would still put it. Then you do not have to put it back. So that we learn from Asher Toichal Ha'esh as her oila al the mizbeach. The pasuk is saying that the fire burnt the oila on the mizbeach, implying only we're talking about an oila and other similar things like that. As in fact, Rabbi Chanina Baman Yomi taught in a brisa, Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov, it should really be B'divei Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov, in a brisa from the yeshiva of Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov, that the pasuk says, Asher Toichal Ha'esh Asher Oila Alam Mizbeach, means, as we just said, Kulei Oila Ata Machzir, you have to put back things from an Oila or other similar korbanos that fell off the Mizbeach, the Ata Machzir, the Kulei Keturas, but not burnt pieces of Keturas that fell off the Mizbeach Apnimi. Tosfos points out that really what it means is anything that belongs on the Mizbeach HaChitzen. So it would include, for example, Levoina of a Mincha. If a Mincha was done properly and the Levoina was placed on it together with the Koimetz, and then some of that Levoina falls off, then yes, it is true that you would put it back. Because we're not being memayat anything that's not a korban. We're just being memayat anything that doesn't belong on the mizbeach hachitzen. In this case, ketores belongs on the mizbeach hapnimi, but as opposed to anything that belongs on the mizbeach hachitzen, then yes, you put it back if it fell off. So we're learning that from this. Pasuk, says Rabbi Gamliel. The idach. Well, what does Rabbi Yeshua answer to that? He says, yeah, that's true, but lav mele shmamino de ikula olam adrinan. The fact is, yes, you're learning from that meal that you don't do that for keturas, but the fact is, you are at least deriving from it the point that pieces of an ola have to be returned to the mizbeach. So therefore, yes, you do have, you can learn both things from it. Number one, that you do this for an ola and other things that belong on the mizbeach. Number two, that you do not do it for keturas. Well, in that case, then, so says Rabbi Yeshua. Then, in that case, I have the words. Hi ho oila al moikta available to teach me the drasha that only things that belong on the fire are im olu lo yered, and if not, then not. Unlike you, Rabbi Gamliel, you want to use that pasuk to tell us the basic din of poikin. But Rabbi Yeshua says you don't need the basic din of poikin. You can learn the entire din from the words Asher Toichal Ha'esh Asher Oila Al Mizbeach in the next pasuk. So that's the machlokes. Then that's why Rabbi Yeshua holds that it would be only things that belong in the fire that have this rule of im olu layirdu. Okay. Next, Rabbi Gamliel Amar Kol Aroi Cholo. Then he said Rabbi Gamliel, on the other hand, does not hold like that, and he says anything that belongs on the mizbeach stays on the mizbeach, even if it's not something for the fire, because he says, because the pasuk says al mota al mizbeach, implying anything that belongs on the mizbeach. So now we have to ask the other way around. Rabbi Yeshua Nami, according to Rabbi Yeshua, what are we doing with the words al mizbeach? Hoksiv mizbeach, and the answer is Ahumi boyle. My timer kamarachmana, because not timer is in parentheses, it doesn't really belong. The question is not what the reason, but what does the pasuk say? My kamarachmana. What does the pasuk mean? Call haroy lemoikta, anything which is suitable for the pyre, for the burning place on the mizbeach, mekabish mizbeach, then the mizbeach makes it holy. In other words, the words ala mizbeach is not meant to teach us something extra. It's meant to teach us that what things is the Mizbeach Mekadesh, only things that belong on the fire. So therefore, you're not learning something else from it. So why does it stay there? Because of the Kedusha of the Mizbeach. Now, the point of that is, one of the Achronim, the Taras HaKodesh, explains the reason why we need to be told that is because we have a general rule. We're going to talk later on about the idea that clay sharis on the kaddish, things that are placed in them, but only if they're roy for it. The same way as we said before, for example, the koimetz is roy to be placed in a tli sharis, and once it becomes in a tli sharis, now it's miskaddish and has the full kedusha of a koimetz. The same way with everything else, it's placed in a kli sharis, it gets the kedusha, it gets kedusha zagruf, but only if it belongs in that kli sharis. One example of that is, we're going to learn in Masechet Menachos, says Hashem, when it comes to the Lechem Aponim and various other kinds of loaves that are baked for certain kinds of korbanos, they become the oven itself, the Mekadosh them, the oven itself in which they're baked is considered a klisharis. But when do they become holy? Only when they're baked enough to form a crust, because that's the minimum that they're considered bread. Before that, it's not Mekadosh them. They're in it and they're baking in it, but nevertheless, they're still considered dough, and therefore they're not Neskadosh. So here, you would have thought maybe they have to be burned a little bit in the fire in order to say him olo lo yodu. So no, we're saying that just the fact that it was meant to go on the fire is good enough for it to stay on the mizbeach, even if it wasn't yet burned in the fire. But nevertheless, says Rabbi Yeshua, the pasuk is saying al ha'esh, and then al moikta al mizbeach, and therefore it means that it has to be something that belonged in the fire. Okay, the Gemara asks back to Idach, what would Rabbi Gamliel answer to that? He says you need both words according to him. The Idach, what would Rabbi Gamliel answer to that? The answer is Mizbeach Achrina. The answer is yes, according to him, but he points out you have another place where it mentions the word Mizbeach in this connection. The pasuk says anything that touches the Mizbeach becomes holy. There it doesn't say anything about fire, so therefore we see that anything that touches the Mizbeach, when it's something that at least has a certain connection with the Mizbeach, fire or not, nevertheless it stays on the Mizbeach. Now, it is true, though, Kodesh David points out that Rabbi Gamliel still needs both psukim. If you only had Kol HaNegev and Mizbeach Yirkash, you would think that even outright psulim of the kind that we're going to learn in the next Mishnah tomorrow, Be'ez Hashem, are also included. No, so we need the word Hiya Ola Mokta on Mizbeach, that it somehow has to belong on the Mizbeach, like an Ola. But nevertheless, it doesn't have to belong on the fire of the Mizbeach, per se. Okay, the Idach, what would Rabbi Yeshua answer to that? He answers, why do we need the two psukim? Chad lahecha dehoisa l'shasa kosher. Because one pasuk teaches us where the korban had a shasa kosher. It was kosher to be burnt on the mizbeach, and then afterwards became posel. So say for example, lon, when the korban was left overnight. Or yotze, when it was taken out of the azara. So it was shechted perfectly properly. Everything was going good. And then he left over the blood after Shkia and it became posel. Or he took the blood or the imurim or whatever outside of the azara and they became posel. So then we need to know that they still, if you do put them on the mizbeachim, olo lo yodu. V'chad lahecha deloy hoysa lo shasa kosher. And the other one would be teaching us where there was not a shasa kosher, namely where the shchita itself was done wrongly with a thought of chutzah zmanei or chutzah mekoymei. Now, we are going to learn in the next Mishnah, there are things that are considered not shasa kosher, which are completely posel and im olu yodu. For example, where the korban was reveya v'nirba, or otherwise completely unsuitable for a korban. But here we're talking about it was suitable for a korban, he just had a wrong machshava during the shchita, which posseled it. Nevertheless, im olu lo yodu would apply there as well, and Rabbi Yeshua says you need a second posel to teach us that. The Idach, what would Rabbi Gamliel answer to that? He would say, you don't need a second posel. Given to psulim ninu v'rabinu rachmana, once those korbanos apostle and the Torah is still being marred by them, that in olo lo yodu, then it doesn't matter. Lo shna hoysa lo shasa kosher, lo shna lo hoysa lo shasa kosher. Then at that point, it doesn't matter shasa kosher or not. There's no, Rabbi Gamliel holds that we don't have to distinguish between them. We can say that once the Torah is allowing one of them, then it's allowing the other, and we don't need a separate posel for it. So that takes care of the opinions of Rabbi Yeshua and Rabbi Gamliel respectively. Next, we have the third opinion in the Mishnah. Rabbi Shimon Omar Zavach Kosher Cholo, that Rabbi Shimon had said, the key factor is this thing coming by itself, or is it coming as an adjunct of something else, so the Nesachim that are coming for a korban? So, Tanya, we learn in a braisa, Rabbi Shimon Omar, like this. The Pasuk says, Oila, and that means we can learn as follows. He says, Ma Oila Habo B'Glal Atzma, an Oila is something that's brought on its own behalf. You don't bring an ola. You don't bring an ola because of something else. You bring an ola because you needed to bring a korban ola. Af kalaboyin begal atzman. Therefore, says Reb Shimon, the rule is going to be anything which is brought on its own. Yotzim nesachim aboyin begal zavach, as opposed to the nesachim that are brought because of a korban. Now the Gemara brings more opinions of Tanoim on the subject of what is included in the rule of Yom Olo Lo Yodu. So far we have three opinions. Rabbi Yeshua is anything that belongs on the fire of the Mizbeach. Rabbi Gamliel is anything that belongs on the Mizbeach, period. And according to Rabbi Shimon, anything that belongs on the Mizbeach on its own, as opposed to because of something else. Now, we have another braisa. The Gemara doesn't introduce it with the word Tanya, but Shittim Kubetis adds the word Tanya. Rabbi Yosi Avlili Omer, Mitoch Shenema Chlanageh B'Mizbeach Yitrash. Now, the Pasuk says anything that touches the Mizbeach becomes holy. Which we said before that Rabbi Gamliel is using that as one of the Pesukim to teach us that anything that belongs on a Mizbeach at all, fire or not, still stays on a Mizbeach. But Rabbi Yitzchak really says, once that Pasuk says that, Shene'ani ben Roy ben She'ne'roi, ben She'ne'roi. So you would think that would mean, whether it's Roy for the Mizbeach or not. Anything that goes on the Mizbeach, period, it stays there, all the Yerin. Nope, Talmud Lomar Kvasim. Therefore, the next Pasuk after that says that you should bring a Korban Tamid, and it says that you should bring sheep. So what does that mean? Mark Vossim Ruin, just like sheep are something that are suitable to bring on the Mizbeach. I call Roy the same thing, only when something is suitable to bring on the Mizbeach, then Im Ololo Yered, but not something that was unsuitable in the first place. Rabbi Akiva says, don't learn from the word Kvossim, but rather Oila. Learn from the fact that it says Oila. Now Rashi says it says Oila in that Possum. It doesn't actually say Oila in that Pasuk. It just says, V'zeh ha-shakas ha-nazeh, k'vosim le'shon ha-shnayim la-yem tovid. But a few psukim later, it does say, Oila s'tomid the dirty seichem. After it talks about the dinim of that korban, it says, this should be an Oila that's constant throughout your generations. So therefore, Rabbi Akiva learns from the word Oila that ma Oila ra'uya, akol ra'uya, the same way as an Oila is something suitable for the Mizbeach, the same thing, anything that's suitable for the Mizbeach. So these are two more opinions than we had in the Mishnah rather than learning from the pasuk ki ha'ola amokda alam izbeach as Rabbi Yeshua and Rabbi Gamliel and Rabbi Shimon learned, they're rather learning from the pasuk in Parshas Tetzaveh about kol anigei b'mizbeach yukdosh, and that the pasuk continues after that by describing the korban chonking.
Just one point.
Yeah.
If that is the case, the point of Rabbi Akiva, it says Ola Uya, it should say that everywhere. How does he explain the fact that it doesn't say that everywhere?
That it doesn't say what everywhere?
Ola Uya. It says Ola Moda Uya.
We understand. An Ola, by definition, is something that's Uya. It doesn't need to say it everywhere. It just needs to say it in one place. But we know what are the rules that make an Ola Roy. It has to be Tomim. It has to be, you have all the various rules about an Ola. So now, once it's Roy, then we can learn from this that the Pasuk is saying Ola. Tosfos actually wonders, according to these opinions, according to Rabbi Akiva in particular, why are we saying that it applies to why are we saying that it would apply only to all Korbanos? Maybe it would apply only to an Ola.
That's more logical, yes. That's okay, very logical.
Okay, so a couple of Achronim give answers about that. First of all, obviously, the Pasuk, first of all, because like this, the Gemara is going to explain that the Pasuk is saying, the Gemara is going to explain now when we're going to go through Rabbi Yosef Aglili and Rabbi Akiva's opinions. Again, so Rabbi Yosef Aglili is learning from the word Kvasim. Rabbi Akiva is learning from the word Ola. We're going to explain in a second what the Nafkamina is between them. But of course, each one also has to have a use for the other one's Pasuk. Now, therefore, though, the fact is, the Pasuk does say Kvasim, and if it meant only an Ola, then, for example, it would mean not a Mincha as well. Well, then there would be no reason for the word Kvasim. So, therefore, the word Ola over here, we have to understand, meaning not just an Ola, as in the specific type of korban called an Ola, but anything that goes up on the Mizbeach, which is the literal meaning of the word Ola. So that's one answer. And another answer is... Hold on one second. Yeah. Another answer is because the pasuk says kol hanegeya b'mizbeach yikdash, and therefore it means anything. So therefore it means more than just an oila. Or again, because zois tardas hamincha, which means everything that goes on the mizbeach. So then we'd have the word kvasim or the word oila, which would be a mute to exclude certain kinds of things that are not roy, but it wouldn't be to exclude anything outside of an oila.
An Ola, does it have to be only a Kvasim or Keres?
No, or it can be cows, sheep, or goats. It has to be a male animal, but it can be a male of any of those three species.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. So the Gemara says, my Benai, what is the practical difference between Rabbi Yosef Aglili and Rabbi Akiva's opinions? Both of them are learning from the same Pasuk. Both of them are saying that it has to be something that's Roy. Between them would be as far as an Ola Sa'if that became Possel and then was placed on the Mizbeach. That would be the difference. Rabbi Akiva is learning from the word Ola. Well, that includes an Ola Sa'if as well. Im Ola Lo Yerin. Or Mar Maisu Lame Kvasim, whereas Rabbi Yosef Aglili is learning from the word Kvasim, a bird is not kvasim. So he would hold, fine, it's not only kvasim, it's other kinds of animals as well, but only animals, not birds. Okay. The Gemara says, "L'man de ma'isila mikvasim." Well, Rabbi Yosef really who learns from kvasim, haksiv oila. What is he doing with the word oila? And the answer is iksiv kvasim, but iksiv oila, because Rabbi Yosef really says, if it said only kvasim and didn't say the word oila, havamin after the mechayim. You would think that even if the animal was brought up onto the mizbeach alive, then nevertheless lo yerdu. And the next Mishnah is going to tell us it's not so. If the animal is brought up to the mizbeach alive, then you're supposed to take it down from there, because it doesn't belong on the mizbeach until after it's shechted. What you do is, if you shechted it on the top of the mizbeach, then the next Mishnah will tell us what we do with it. But l'hatchila, we wouldn't leave it up there and shecht it right there. But if we only had the word kvasim, we would think we do. Therefore, we need the word ola, only something that actually belongs going up onto the mizbeach. Okay, Olaman de Maisilam et Ola. What about Rabbi Akiva who learns from the word Ola, Hoksib Kvasim? What is he doing with the word Kvasim? And the answer is Iksib Ola, but Iksib Kvasim, because if it only said Ola and not Kvasim, Hava Amina, then Rabbi Akiva would say, you would say like this, Afil Mincha, that maybe even a Mincha that's possible that goes up onto the Mabeach should be in also Layerin. Kosar Rahman Kvasim, therefore the Torah tells us Kvasim. Now, according to Rabbi Akiva, it's not meant to exclude birds, but it is meant to exclude non living things. So according to him, it has to be some kind of turban that comes from a living creature. So it can include animals, it can include birds. Both of those have the rule of him, but not a mincha. So the Gemara says, that covers the difference between Rabbi Yosef Glili and Rabbi Akiva. In short, the difference would be as far as an Ola Sa'ot. They both agree that with animals we would say him Ola Yered. They both agree with a mincha we would not say that. The Machlokas would be as far as birds. Okay, what about the other three Tanoim in our Mishnah? My Ikabin Hani Tanoi Lahani Tanoi de Masnissin. What about we have the three Tanoim in our Mishnah? We have the two Tanoim in the Braisa. What's the difference? What's the Nafkamina and Halacha between them? And the answer is Amara Papa, Kmatsim Shakonshubakli Ikabinayu. The Nafkamina would be with the Koimets where it was properly placed in the Keli. The Tanoi did Dan Lo Yodu, according to the Tanoim of our Mishnah, Rabbi Gamliel and Rabbi Yeshua, Lo Yodu, you would not take them off. According to Rabbi Gamliel, certainly not, because they belong on the Mizbeach. Unlike we said at the top of the Omud where it was not Kodshu B'Kli, and then it doesn't yet belong on the Mizbeach. Here it was placed in a Kli Shardus, it belongs on the Mizbeach, so it definitely goes there. And according to Rabbi Yeshua also, the claimant is meant to be burnt in the fire, and therefore it also stays on the Mizbeach. According to Rabbi Shimon, maybe not, because it depends whether it's a mincha that's coming by itself or together with a korban. The Tanoi de Masnissa Yodu, whereas according to the Tanoim of the Braisa, it would go down because both of them are learning from that it has to be similar to Kvasim, that it has to be either exclusively animals according to Rabbi Yisraeli, or also birds according to Rabbi Akiva, but in any case, not a mincha. So we'll continue tomorrow. Bez Hashem, we'll continue with various other dinim about what would be as far as various cases of korbanos and things brought to the mizbeach. What are the cases where we would say that according to each of these five tanoim, what would be taken down from the mizbeach and what would not and what would remain there on the rule of Im Ololo Yerid. So we'll continue that tomorrow, Bez Hashem.
Shkaya.